start off by you guys introducing yourselves to the crowd. Tell us just a bit about yourself and tell us about your startup.
My name is Sai Minion. I work for a company called Cloud Choreo, and we automate we automate DevOps.
And I'm Steve Drozdowski. I'm with Heroically. We're in the predictive marketing analytics space, and essentially what we do is we turn path of purchase data and attribution data into revenue opportunity and media plans for marketers.
Paul Allen, no relation. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Cloud Choreo. We crowdsource and automate DevOps, as I was saying, in a way that can be extended and added to by the open source community to sort of keep your infrastructures up to date and best practices, et cetera.
And what's your tagline? It's like...
What is our tagline?
I can't say that.
Okay.
you guys can ask him after the show. All right, so I've got a few questions for you guys. So you better put your thinking caps on, and remember this is for the benefit of the folks in the crowd here. First of all, maybe some of the folks in the crowd are also startups. Maybe they're thinking about being startups, thinking about taking that leap. What, in your opinion, is the best thing about working for yourself in a startup on your own project, on your own dream, basically? Is it all the free time that you get, being able to set your own hours?
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah, sure, I'll take that. The free time is not so much. Somebody once told me that entrepreneurs are people that work 80 hours so that they don't have to work 40, and that's very true. I'd say the best thing about being an entrepreneur is being able to work on something that you're really passionate about. You're able to actually change something, so you can make a decision and implement it that day. Maybe a great decision, maybe a crappy decision, but either way, you get to see the results from what you do.
I actually love all the free time. Everything I do is for free. I work for free all day. It's awesome. But no, seriously, something that gets you up in the morning and gets you really going every day is really awesome, and you can't put a price tag on that, question mark?
Yeah, exactly what these guys said. Definitely working on something that you're passionate about, and if you're passionate about it, it doesn't really feel like work. Well, there's definitely hard times, but overall, it's really fun to be in a startup, you're working on something you like and something you really want to build, and essentially build your dream.
There you go. Now, Sai, you've been doing this for a little while. How many startups have you done?
I lost count, actually.
Okay.
Probably 16 or 17, something like that.
Can you give us a little bit of perspective by telling us what's the difference between like now and maybe 10 years ago in running a startup?
Sure. I'd say the biggest change that I've seen over the course of the last 15 years that I've been doing this, it's a lot easier to get from an idea on a napkin to, is this a viable business? It used to be we literally had to build the business from the ground up, try to find some customers, and then decide if it was something you wanted to pursue. Now you can have an idea, put up a splash page the next day, sell a virtual product that you haven't even coded yet, and then decide if it's worth it or not without spending any money or any significant amount of time on it.
It's pretty powerful. Yeah, we've got some pretty amazing technology in place now. You want to talk to that one, Steve?
Sure. I think the cloud has really changed. It kind of, when he was mentioning here, it used to cost $1 million to get a business off the ground, but nowadays with things like Azure, it's really simple to take an idea to an actual product. So it's really great that we have the solutions out there nowadays that really help entrepreneurs figure out really quickly if their product's viable, if there was a market for it, and they can really test it real quick and fail and succeed within a few weeks.
The other thing that I've seen is people are more willing these days to deal with a product that isn't perfect. So as an entrepreneur, you're kind of encouraged now to put out a product that might not be perfect, might have bugs, but might add some value to somebody out there somewhere.
It's almost like the Agile isn't just affecting our development work cycles, but we're bringing the actual end users, the consumers in on that cycle, and they like it. Like when I get software that I know is very, very nascent, it's long from being released, I like feeling like they've given it to me early and I get a chance to glance at it.
Yeah, people love beta products. It's like it's like, here's our crappy software with bugs in it, like, but no one else can use it. Awesome, I'm in.
Especially if it's an elite beta group, right? Can any of you elaborate on the role that either Azure or Docker has played in your startup so far?
I can take that. Docker on Azure has been awesome. As many of you probably know, I'm part of the Microsoft Accelerator program was to give us all a big chunk of Azure credits. And we run these engines in the background that kind of take dummy workloads off a queue and just empower through everything. We moved all of that over to Azure instantly as soon as we got those credits, and it's all running in Docker, so we have literally hundreds of machines running hundreds of Docker instances, and it's all fully redundant in multi-cloud best practices for sure.
Better than moving VMs?
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah, for us, it's kind of what I mentioned a second ago, as far as, you know, being able to really test things really quickly without having to buy, you know, a whole slew of servers. You can easily, you know, spin stuff up, take it down, and give stuff out to clients, give them access to servers and products that you have available on there, and yeah, just really easy, simple to use.
Now, you guys are all in the process right now of trying to convince consumers that they need what you're selling, right? So you're spinning up, you're trying to get it to take off. In your opinion, what exactly does it take for a technology to take off, for it to kind of enter that tipping point where people start using it, they start talking about it, it catches on, and all of a sudden it's a really big thing? I'm thinking about the kind of momentum that we've seen actually just in Docker. I mean, it was just last year that I heard Docker for the very first time personally, and now all of a sudden it's such a gigantic thing.
Tough one. Yeah. I honestly don't know if I have an actual good answer for that, but it's honestly getting the community involved in the end. If you have a big community behind your product, kind of what Paul was mentioning here a second ago, you know, giving out your beta product, people are really excited to use new products nowadays, and if you can really cultivate that, it's a really easy way to, you know, get the word of mouth out there and really get a, you know, buzz behind your product.
I also think as a company, you have to be willing to shift what you do and shift what you focus on. You have to be ready for people to use your product in a way that you just never thought people would use it. And if that becomes the better way to do things, then pivot and move forward.
And I wouldn't be the sales and marketing guy in the group unless I said go to Cloud Choreo, sign up for a free beta account. Well, thanks for teeing that up for me.
Absolutely, absolutely, that's yours. Steve, you want to, you're teed up, consider yourself teed up.
Heroically, heroic.ly, check us out if you want to improve your marketing efforts.
That's a pretty fancy URL, by the way.
Heroic. Lucky on that one, yeah.
Heroic.ly. Yep. That's awesome.
Yeah, so the story behind it is there's a thing in the marketing world called the hero page. So you take a report that you created, kind of what you did on the job, show it to your boss, and show that he gave you X, you produced Y. So it's kind of our goal is create the hero page for the marketing manager so they can, you know, in the end look like heroes.
Well, now I think we need the story behind Cloud Choreo.
The story is fairly simple. I have been a DevOps guy for 6+ years in an Azure competitor that'll remain nameless. And I started seeing the same problems over and over again with every company I went to, and the tools to move between clouds and manage clouds and all of these things were awful. And I wrote software to replace myself.
Perfect.
So Cloud Choreo, I said we crowdsource and automate DevOps. It's this idea that you can create these small, succinct chunks of infrastructure. So for instance, let's say, you know, Sai's this great guy in networking, and he creates a, I'm going to speak in AWS terms, creates a VPC, right? And it's the best practices. It's got all the bells and whistles. It's completely secure. And then somebody else out there in the crowd has this amazing Hadoop cluster. You can maintain it on your own, just maintain Hadoop, just maintain the VPC, but I, as a third party, can come and suck all the bits and pieces in that I want to. And then after I've sucked them into mine, I can tweak them on my own, for my own purposes, and yet still get the benefits of anybody else's updates as they push them in and suck those updates into my deployment. Then, of course, after you've created your whole infrastructure, Cloud Choreo handles the complexity of translating between the clouds, so we can eliminate vendor lock for you. So she asked if we run long-running Docker instances or if they come and go. So the short, easy answer is everything we do is designed to come and go. We design everything so that when something fails, it just doesn't matter. Our goal is to turn off SSH to all our instances. We haven't achieved that goal, but it is our goal. It's all short running, designed to be highly tolerant of failure. So she asked if management of containers has been an issue. And I can say the workload we're putting on them right now, it is not an issue. When we move, there are some workloads that we do not have containerized, and I do see that becoming an issue. I do know that Docker is working on some stuff to help out with that, and Google has a plan there, and of course, the cloud providers do as well. Sure, so this is getting into some pretty technical stuff. I don't know how much you all want to get into it. Our workloads for our long-running things are designed for, repeat the question. So he's asking how we fit Docker into long-running workloads. And the answer is, right now, we aren't. We are using old school DevOps, where we're using actual instances, and everything's designed for failure, or to handle failure. The statement is, how do you design for something in a world where everything fails? We try to deal with that. The Docker instances we use are very short running, and they take dumb workloads off a queue and run through it and. He asked if Docker is only for dev test staging and not for production, and my view is the right tool for any job. And Docker is this amazing tool that, again, like I alluded to in the beginning, there's ways to use this that no one's done yet and no one's even thought of. I think that for us specifically, we are using Docker in production. We aren't using it for things like handling web load yet. And that's simply because we haven't had a need yet. What do I think we could do with Docker in 5 years? That's a question for the Docker guys, isn't it?
Now, you guys have been already using it, right? So what do you think? How are you going to scale it in the next 5 years?
Well, so a big problem with anything you do in the DevOps world is drift. And drift on a server is eliminated by Docker. I mean, that's just flat out eliminated. And that's a huge, huge plus. If and when we can figure out how to ride that line between ephemeral and consistent or constant, I think at that point we'll have some real value for us personally. But we already have the value for the short running stuff because a lot of workloads are. The question was, how do we orchestrate containers? Currently, right now, God's honest truth, shell scripts. it's literally very dumb workloads. We have a distributed queuing system that we built to handle figuring out who gets what and when, and it basically just hands work down to Docker, which runs it through perfectly and shoots itself in the head. So the question was, what have we seen for issues running long-running jobs with Docker? The funny ones are like leaving a tail open in Emacs. That's not cool. It always kills your box pretty quick. But realistically, the monitoring of the actual process, if and when you start a long-running one, like if you're running Nginx or something, I don't know what your stack is, but if it dies, how do you know and how do you restart it? That's sort of the short answer, because when it does die and comes back, or when you bring it back, has your state changed? Like make sure it can come back correctly. The question was, what are the advantages of Azure specifically in the Azure Docker relationship? And so the environment we actually work in, like the company environment, is sort of like a big football field room with a bunch of startups in it. And Cloud Corio is heavy, like back-end Linux, like DevOps shop. So what do we do? Not much in the way of UI. I can tell you that the benefits that I've seen among all the other startups are a lot of like extremely fast deployments. Like not fast in terms of serving requests, but the ability to get up and running with whatever code you're using and the actual experience of getting up and running is very good. And this is coming from a non-Azure guy for the past 6 years. The Azure like actual log in and try to get your stuff up and running in a way that you can serve your customers is extremely good in Azure. Cloud Choreo, again, all command line, very different experience, but that's what I've seen.